That is the sound of New York City in the 1970s, and this week, the world lost a salsa music legend. On Monday, Johnny Pacheco, the renowned band leader, musician, and co-founder of the salsa label Fania Records, died at the age of 85. Widely considered the godfather of salsa, the Dominican-born Pacheco helped popularize salsa music internationally, with his label Fania eventually becoming known as, quote, the Motown of salsa. A Juilliard-trained instrumentalist, Pacheco joined forces with lawyer Jerry Masucci in 1964 to form Fania Records. The label had humble beginnings, selling albums out of car trunks in Spanish Harlem. But before long, Fania Records grew into the major label, recording and promoting the sounds of salsa, complete with its own orchestra, the Fania All-Stars. Over his decades-long career, Pacheco himself wrote and recorded more than 150 songs, earned countless Grammy nominations, and was inducted into the International Latin Music Hall of Fame in 1998. In August 1973, the Fania All-Stars sold out New York's Yankee Stadium for a legendary concert. And they even took the show on to Zaire in Africa. Fania landed some of the biggest names in salsa music, including the queen of salsa herself, Celia Cruz, whose career embodied the evolution of Latin music in the United States. Fania Records also spread the salsa and jazz stylings of famed pianist Eddie Palmieri, who fused American jazz with Afro-Cuban rhythms. The beloved Puerto Rican singer Hector Lavoe, as well as musicians Rubén Blades and Willie Colón, became hallmarks of salsa around the world, all thanks to Johnny Pacheco and Fania. As a New Yorker who grew up on this music, Johnny Pacheco and Fania Records was a constant part of the rhythms of the streets of New York in the 1970s. My family had stacks of Fania Records, and many of the songs would become staples of household gatherings. For many, Fania also represented the sound of a new chapter in the Puerto Rican, Dominican, and Cuban diaspora here in the United States. And now I'm joined by Bobby Sanabria, a multi-Grammy-nominated drummer, percussionist, band leader who works in the worlds of salsa jazz and Latin jazz, and he's also the host of the radio show Latin Jazz Cruise on WBGO. Bobby, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
And Felix Contreras is the host of NPR Music's Alt Latino. Felix, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me, too. Thanks.
Bobby, tell us about Fania Records and what it meant. I mean, I'm listening to this music and I'm just taken right back to being a kid in New York in the 70s. Tell me, I mean, when you hear this, what does it feel? What does it mean to you to hear this?
Well, it's the soundtrack of my life. I grew up in the South Bronx in New York City, and I'm of Puerto Rican parentage. That means I'm a New York Rican. And for us, Fania represented, for me, you know, my generation coming up in the music, where my parents' generation was the big band sound, mambo, cha-cha-cha, etc. For us, Fania represented more of a sound that was a little bit more contemporary, in terms of now the singers became the most important thing. And also, it was homegrown, and the identity markers of Fania, in terms of the way we play Cuban music in New York City, it became very trombone-oriented, solos with the musicians, which was the influence of jazz, etc. It just brings back great memories. You heard Fania recordings in every bodega in New York City when I was growing up. It was the soundtrack of our lives. You couldn't escape it.
You couldn't escape it. It was really just everywhere, and every house party, even today, Christmas, Thanksgiving, you know, when we used to gather, is full of these sounds. Felix, when we talk about Johnny Pacheco and we talk about salsa, Johnny Pacheco elevated this music to a level that, it was international. Tell us how he did that.
He was a schooled musician. He had studied at Juilliard, so he was a very, very proficient musician, percussionist, multi-instrumentalist, a fantastic arranger. And when you talk about the Fania sound and you talk about his contribution, it's really, he was the architect, one of the principal architects of the sound itself, and the way he arranged the horns, the way he arranged all the rhythm sections, the way he put the songs together, the way he put the spotlight around this really nice spotlight around whatever vocalist he was working with or instrumentalist he was working with. He worked in the service of others. That's the one thing we need to remember about Johnny Pacheco, that his contribution was making others shine. And that is probably one of the most important things that came out of his relationship with Fania Records.
Bobby, we heard at the very top of the previous segment, we heard a lot of Pacheco songs. I went digging through the crates to get some of these old songs. And one of them was La Esencia del Guaguancó.
Right.
Tell us what the Guaguancó is.
The Guaguancó is a form of rumba. It was the soundtrack also of my life when I was growing up in the South Bronx. It's originally a form that's just voices, drumming and dancing from La Habana, Cuba, and Matanzas. And the basic melody of Guaguancó from the Havana style is this. And Matanza style is this. Now you slow that down a little bit and you get. Escucha usted la esencia del Guaguancó. Which is what you heard there when you played that song. So it was adapted to band styles, and it's one of the forms that we use in salsa, along with the guaracha, the mambo, of course, cha-cha-cha, and the ubiquitous son montuno.
And I want to also, you know, when you're talking about guaguancó, we also talk about the clave, which is the beat that goes with a lot of salsa music. Felix, a lot of this is also deepening the connection that Latinos particularly had with their Afro-Caribbean roots. Wasn't that a big part of the creation of salsa, so much that the Fania All-Stars even took the band over to Africa and to Zaire and other countries to perform there? Tell us about that.
It is the essence, it's the bedrock, it's everything about salsa music and what became known as salsa music is that connection to Africa through the clave and through things like the spiritual side of it, the Santeria side and 6-8, what they call 6-8 music forms and stuff like that. And I've always been like so enamored. I'm Mexican American, I'm originally from California, I grew up out there. And I was always enamored by this music. It wasn't part of my soundtrack as a youth. So whenever I saw things like this film that was made in 1974 in Zaire, what always struck me is that it was so powerful that they took the African part of salsa back to Africa and the Africans embraced it. I did an interview I'm spacing on her name right now. I did an interview with an African vocalist who said that she was at that concert and that made her number one embrace salsa even more. But also the fact when she saw Celia Cruz performing with the Fania All-Stars, it empowered her as a woman to be able to be a vocalist and be a strong presence in the music business.
Bobby, let's talk a little bit about a specific instrument, the cuatro. How has that made its way into what we know as salsa?
Oh, well, my good friend, Yomo Toro from Guanica, Puerto Rico, my father's home city, was a master of that instrument. May he rest in peace. I got to perform with it many times. The cuatro is our mandolin-like instrument from Puerto Rico. It originally had four sets of double strings, but in 1952, an artisan put a fifth set of strings. But most people ask me, well, why don't they call it the cinco, which means five, you know? And I say, well, I guess we're conservative as Puerto Ricans. We kept the name cuatro, which means four, you know? But that instrument originally in the song tradition, which is the folk song tradition of Eastern Cuba, which is the foundation of what we call salsa, the tres was the main instrument, which is a mandolin-like sounding guitar from Cuba. It has three sets of double strings. Yomo Toro played that instrument as well, even though he was Puerto Rican, but he decided to bring the cuatro to a session one day, and he always jokes with me. Well, I started going, why didn't you just keep playing the tres? He goes, well, I did in the beginning, but it's the cuatro is smaller, so it's easier to carry, and he started laughing, you know. So, but we're so glad that he did that because it put an identity marker of Puerto Ricanness into the music.
Fania itself is often compared to Motown. Tell us about that comparison.
It's a very accurate comparison. Motown in Detroit, Stax in Memphis. Those labels were associated with a particular style of music, a particular community, most importantly. And Fania was the same thing. You're in, you know, one of the biggest cities in the world, New York. And this is not, it's a New York music, but it's a New York music from the Latino barrios, from the Latino community. So it is very specific to New York. Like I said, I'm out in California, and it was like, it was so intriguing to me. So I must have an Afro-Caribbean soul or lived in the Afro-Caribbean in the past, because it just drew me in. And that music, everything, you know, we're talking about the 70s. There's no internet, there's no streaming, there's no downloading. I had to wait for these records to come out and absorb them. I had to drive to San Francisco to check them out and buy them. So it reflected this like, put the whole idea of the Latin community in New York on this, like, cloud, this pedestal, like, well, what it must be like to live in that in the day to day, what you guys experienced.
We do. I was a young person there. I was a child, but I remember it. But Bobby, Fania isn't just about the music. There were the clubs, there were the studios. Tell us about that experience. I mean, going to the clubs, I remember watching my aunts getting ready to go out and to dance this music, and it was a thing.
Right. Well, it was ubiquitous. As I said before, you had about 20 to 30 nightclubs in Manhattan alone, where any night of the week, I'm talking about 7 nights a week, you could hear any style in what we call salsa. You could hear a Cuban style conjunto, like in Johnny Pacheco's band, which is two trumpets and a rhythm section. Puente or Machito's band or Tito Rodriguez's orchestra, which is a big band. You could hear in the charanga style, which is flute and violins. So, and then you had the clubs in the Bronx. The Bronx at one time had as many or as more nightclubs in both jazz and Latin than Manhattan, and then in Brooklyn as well. It was just incredible. And then, you know, thousands of musicians being able to work and live off this, make a living at this, the recording studio, the recording industry. Then you have people, you know, when you go out dancing, you got to get dressed up, etc. So that's part of the industry as well, clothing, shoes, etc. Then people buying the recordings. So it was an incredible industry that was happening that no longer really exists anymore on the level that it did when I was coming up. So I miss those days fondly. And I must say, the music at the time period gave us sustenance, gave us life, because New York City, as you well know, during that time period in the 70s was going through a period of malfeasance. The city went bankrupt. It finally imploded in 1977 with the blackout. And what gave us sustenance, let us survive and thrive, it was this music. It was the pulse of New York City.
You're so right about that, Bobby. And Felix, you know, as somebody, you said you didn't grow up in New York, but you still knew about the music. Do you recall how it came out there to California? Was it a similar, you know, were there also people going out to the clubs at that time?
This was, I was still a teenager. I was in high school and I was, you know, a music geek, like I am now. And I was just reading, I read about it in the national press. I read about it in Rolling Stone. I had a subscription to Rolling Stone when it was a different type of magazine back then. And I was intrigued. And honestly, I don't know what attracted me to it. I just remember I went to, salsa was so big that a friend of mine, he started a salsa band like 73, 74, something like that. I was a kid. And I went to go hear him. And I remember walking into the little hall where he was playing. And I heard, Bobby, I heard that piano, that dun, 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 dun. And I'm like, boom, like the sky opened up and everything. And for the longest time, I didn't know what it was called. I just kept calling it that music. I want to hear that music, that music. And then I just, like, I would go to record stores. I would try to find stuff. I found a Puente album. I started to learn how to play congas and timbales because of Santana, but this music drew me in. The first song I learned to play on timbales was El Raton Live from the Yankee Stadium album from the Fania All-Stars, because it was so simple. I had a quarter note cowbell beat, so I could do that, right? It just drew me in, and that's how I found that music. And then I just soaked everything up. When I got to college, I drove to San Francisco. There was a place in San Francisco, Musica Latina. It was like the Tower Records of salsa. I could go in there and pick up as many Fania records as I could take back home.
Bobby, as we sort of wind down this segment, Fania obviously has struck a chord with so many of us of a certain age and a certain era, but how do we keep that spirit of that music alive, particularly as the Puerto Rican and Dominican diaspora shifts and changes. A lot of you don't hear this music on the radio as much anymore. How do we keep this stuff alive?
Well, I have the philosophy, just like Dizzy Gillespie always said, as long as there's one black person on planet Earth singing the blues, jazz will never die. So as long as there's one Latino person, doesn't have to be Cuban or Puerto Rican, it could be any person, it could be of any race, as long as one person is playing clave and singing an old Cuban song, this music will never die. But the main thing is these segments like you're doing with us right now, people drawing attention to the music, etc., and also making the connections. I remember when I was in college at the Berklee College of Music, and nobody knew who Tito Puente was or anything like that. And one guy goes to me, a fellow student goes, "Yeah, man, I'm into Santana." And I go, "Well, if you want to find out where those rhythms that Santana is doing, check this out." And I would play him something by Típica 73 or Maestro Tito Puente, etc. And they'd be, you know, same thing with that Felix experience. Their eyes would open up, and it was like they were seeing God. Because they would be going, "Oh my God, man, this is like, wow, oh, you know, this, that, and the other." And I go, you see, I'm, you know, so we just have to scream, not scream and shout, but those of us, I've passed on the music to my son, he'll pass it on to his children, etc. We just have to keep, unfortunately with COVID now, this is a dance music, we get together to dance. And with COVID now, unfortunately, we can't really do that. But we can still listen to the music. So listen to Alt Latino, listen to my radio show, listen to WNYC, et cetera, and keep playing the recordings. Keep playing the recordings for anybody.
And when this is all over, Bobby, when this is all over, grab a partner and get down, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Felix Contreras is the host of NPR's Alt Latino, and Bobby Sanabria is a multi-Grammy nominated drummer, percussionist, and bandleader who works in salsa, jazz, and Latin jazz. Thanks to you both so much for a very fun time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tanzina.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.